Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
When is the word probably the best guide to Japan going to become definitely the best guide to Japan? Is that not for you to say, or is it for other people to say, is the question for me?
I feel like after 1 year of doing this podcast, we kind of level up like a Pokemon, and that probably becomes a definitely.
Yes, we evolve.
Exactly. The uncertainty dissipates, we evolve, and we become definitely the greatest source of information on Japan ever.
Mm. We eat ourselves. We eat ourselves. We get right up our own behinds and we eat ourselves. That was too graphic.
You've just taken a pretty cool situation and made it quite graphic and unpleasant.
Yeah, well, you know, it's lit for me and early for you, so what are you gonna do about it? The last podcast we recorded was early for me and late for you, except I made it later for me because I slept in. Yay.
Yeah, now how the tables have turned. It's 8 a.m. here in Japan. I've just woken up and the first thing I'm doing is sitting in front of a microphone speaking with Pete Donaldson, ladies and gentlemen. Wouldn't wish it upon anyone.
This is like pillow talk for Chris. This is him just waking up and, you know, full of the joys of waking up, and now he's right in a podcast town. Population him.
Speaking of waking up, Pete, I have the world's worst neighbour, I've decided.
Right.
So a few months ago, a brand new neighbour moved in. And in Japan, I've never met a single one of my neighbours.
Yes.
It's kind of funny. People here are quite shy. I think they know I'm a foreigner, so they make an extra effort to hide away from me and keep the hell away. So I never see them. But I've seen my new neighbour once. It's a guy, I know that much. Mm. But I think he has OCD. I'm pretty certain he has OCD. I hope he has OCD, because I don't know what other reason it would be. So about 7 a.m. every morning, without fail, I wake up to the sound of banging noise.
Mm.
And it's the sound of the door to his apartment being shut and locked. And then he walks off, right? So he goes away, locks his door, and off he goes to work. Except he doesn't, because 20 seconds later, he returns to the front door, and he starts locking it again. And he pulls the door towards himself 10 times. 1, 2, 3, 4. And each time, there's a little gap in the door, right? So he's doing it to test that the door's definitely locked. And there's a little gap in the door after it's locked. So it kind of gives this loud vibration sound of the metal of the door hitting the metal frame of the door. And it's like he's checking the door lock. He does this 10 times, right?
No.
Bang, bang, bang. And my bloody head is next to the wall where his front door is. So I hear it with perfect clarity. 10 times, bang, bang, bang. I wake up and I'm like, oh no, not again. And some days he'll walk off then. And then he'll come back again. A second time,
and do it again. Times.
Bang, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Bang, 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 bang. Oh my God, what's he doing? At first, I thought, the first month, I just thought, oh, he's just got a crap door. But then one day I walked outside and I actually witnessed him do it. I saw him sort of walk away, come back and just test it. And clearly, something's not right there. The only reason I haven't opened the door at 7 a.m. and shouted at him is because I'm a little bit sympathetic to the plight of people with OCD. Usually it is a traumatic experience. Something must have happened to him. Maybe somebody robbed him or broke into his flat once or something. But yes, it's bloody annoying. It's a really weird situation to be in, and I don't know what to do. I don't want to confront him about it.
Yeah.
I don't know how he'll react. And yeah, I don't want to be the sort of troublemaking foreigner. Okay, what would you do?
The problem with
it's
that...
It's a really annoying, frustrating, weird situation. Like, who would have dreamt this situation would happen to you every morning? 7 a.m, you're laying in bed. I usually get up around 8:30 to 9,
okay.
Sometimes 10 if I'm editing till late. And it's just horrible, because you just wake up to this banging noise, and you know it's going to keep happening for the next 20 minutes. You're going to be laying there awake with this banging noise going on and on. And it's clearly driving me slightly mental.
You are sympathetic, but also the fact that it is kind of needless makes it a little bit more annoying. But the one thing I would sort of say about Japanese apartments is that every Airbnb I've stayed in, the thing that's always surprised me is all of the doors are frequently metal. They're always metal on metal. It's like an aluminium sort of steel mix. I don't know what kind of metal it is, but it's very rare anywhere else in the world to have a metal on metal interaction. It's usually wood on UPVC
metal interaction.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you wake up in the morning and it is quite loud, and it's, you know, and it, even though they're quite quiet people, it's the closing of the door, it's just a big metal contraption. And nowhere else in the world have I ever experienced so much like metal on metal action in the morning.
You've deployed such poetic rhetoric to describe this experience of metal on metal.
But could you not just buy him like a UPVC door or something? Just buy him like a plastic door. I don't know why he's double checking the thing. I mean, you live in Sendai.
It's not double checking. What's 10 times to the power of 3?
He's doing it at least three times. Yeah.
30 times he's checking that door. And I'm pretty sure it's a good door, because I've got the same door and I know it works. I nearly did get up yesterday. It happened really badly, and I nearly did. It was really annoying. It like happened twice.
Mm.
So he checked it 20 times at this point. And then you hear him walk off towards the elevator, towards the lift.
Yeah.
And you think, thank God, now it's time to go back to sleep. But there's a sense of dread, and you can feel it. And then you hear the footsteps, tap, 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 coming back, and you're like, oh my God, not again. And it'll bang, and it'll happen again, and I'll lose my temper. I nearly went out yesterday, just went, what's wrong with your door? What's going on with the door? Why isn't the door working? What are you doing to your door? Was your door all right? I nearly had a mental breakdown, and God.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because if you start doing it back to him even earlier than him, that's a pain in the bum. It might be worth just sort of saying, could your situation, condition manifests itself in a slightly quieter manner, sir, if you don't mind me asking? Or, if this is going to be the situation every morning, would you be offended if I added rubber pads to the inner lining of your door? Because it is rather loud, and you do it rather early. Thank you. And
first of all, I'd have trouble doing that in English. Even if I was in the UK and this situation arose, I'd have trouble doing that in Japanese, trying to find the words to eloquently say, do you want rubber on your door? Can you obsessively, compulsively, disorderly check your door more quietly, please? I don't know how to say that in Japanese.
No.
Barely know how to say it in English. Oh, God. This is such an annoying situation. It's to the point that it's almost comedic, because it's so ridiculous.
It's awkward as well. It's a very British kind of problem, because you're going, I don't want to make a big deal because I'll be seen as a troublemaker. But in reality, this is actually quite problematic.
I'm fairly sure if I was an American, one of my American friends would have opened the door a few days in and been like, what's going on with the door?
What the fuck, man? The fuck is wrong with your door?
That's exactly what they would have said in a New Jersey accent.
Throw it open to the listeners. If anyone's got any experience with dealing with this sort of situation, because that is upsetting. I would find that very upsetting.
Upsetting.
Yeah, that's exactly the word.
What happened to Chris Broad? Oh, he had a mental breakdown because his neighbour with obsessive compulsive disorder sent him over the edge.
Yeah,
just use door banging behaviour.
Just use it like an alarm clock in many ways.
It's just the smallness of the banging. It's just bang, bang. It's not a big bang, right? It's kind of right. like a little bang. It happens again and again and ah. Oh. Anyway, we've already spent 10 minutes of me
I'm
talking about
it.
This annoying problem. I'm sure you're enjoying. I'm sure some of the listeners are enjoying listening to my pain. The real life of a YouTuber. What goes on behind the scenes of the Abroad in Japan empire. It's just me laying in bed every morning getting angry and frustrated by door banging noise.
Maybe, I mean, I'm trying
not
to think
glamorous
what,
at all.
What other metal on metal situations are in your apartment building. I imagine once you've finished editing a particularly exciting video, you slam your laptop in jubilation and the aluminium lid smashes, and that's what he gets so annoyed about. He's just giving you a little bit back.
Or maybe it's, yeah, maybe it's revenge for the podcast.
Yeah, massively.
Or something, I don't know. Either way, it's a crap situation.
It is.
And
I'm
going to lose my temper. Something's going to happen. Something's going to happen. Another situation I've found I've got to work out is that an equally difficult situation, an equally difficult decision. As I reach the end of my cycle now, I have hair. I have hair on my face. Facial hair,
ooh.
I call it. And I've got like a little beard and a little moustache. And you would have seen it when you were on the cycle. But now it's in like, now it's a lot bigger and more profound. And
profound.
Because I've been cycling profound facial hair. So I've been doing it a month and a half, right? And I didn't want to shave for continuity purposes. I wanted to show the progress of time. So you can see, you know, you start the cycle on day one, and by day 35, 36, whatever, you can see I've got hair on my face. I quite like it. And I don't know what if I should get rid of it completely or keep it and trim it and make it more refined. What do you think, viewers? I'm putting this one to the listeners of the podcast. If you look at recent videos, you can see what it looks like. But I don't know. Do I look better with or without facial hair? What do you think, Pete?
I mean, I've got a few years on you, and I'm furious that I've never been able to grow a beard. I did Movember once, which is a charity, if you're not familiar, where people, men, basically show off to get sponsored to grow a moustache for cancer awareness. I think it's prostate cancer.
Yeah.
And I could only grow a little moustache. My hair only grows in a little goatee beard and a moustache. So there's no other place that it really grows. Like, I've never been able to grow sideburns or anything like that, which is very upsetting. So to see you, a man who I am way older than, be able to grow a perfectly serviceable little beard, it's kind of upsetting. And your hair is so dark. That's the thing that gets me. Your hair is so dark, and I'm starting to get little white hairs in my beard, such as it is, and it's like quite upsetting.
Well,
that
so
my
do
first
I have two.
Well, my first full beard will be a white beard, I reckon. It's going to be very upsetting. It's going to be harrowing. It is
like Gandalf, innit?
Yeah, definitely.
Gandalf the Donaldson. Yeah, it's my two big situations, my two big decisions. What do I do about my neighbour with obsessive compulsive disorder? What do I do about my facial hair? Help me out, guys. This is what the podcast is for. I'm agony aunt situation.
If your neighbour wants to indulge in a repetitive motion every morning, maybe he could come around and shave you every morning.
Oh, God.
Shave me.
What is it? You and all this horrible imagery you're conjuring up this morning. It's too early in the morning for
a Japanese man just shaving you.
Oh, God. Anyway, guys, seeing as we have been cycling the last month, we have come back to the fax machine overflowing with comments and questions sent in by you guys. So this week, like last week, we'll be answering your comments and questions you've sent in. What is the first one we've got, Mr. Donaldson?
Oh, well, can we go for Tian's one in Perth in Australia, or do you want Anders?
Let's
go for Anders then. All right. Hey, Chris and Pete. Loving the awesome podcast. Nice. I just did Kevin out of the office in the US. Nice. Listening to all the previous episodes on my way to work, driving across the plains of southern Sweden, sipping on my cappuccino, just wanting to go to Japan more and more for each episode. I think driving across the plains of southern Sweden, sipping on cappuccino, that sounds pretty good to me. The Japanese,
that sounds pretty glorious.
It does quite sound good, doesn't it? I love Sweden. The Japanese lessons you give are so well, but they don't stick that easy in my mind. But I've noticed myself looking out over the morning sunrise saying, wow, in the voice of he's written Nutsaki instead of Natsuki, so he's basically written Nutsack. the voice of a Nutsack.
Voice of Natsuki going, wow.
Wow.
Nutsaki.
Yeah, Nutsaki. No one wants to drink that.
Oh, God.
It's not in November, anyway. Not allowed it. I do have a question, though. Why don't you have a car, Chris? Is it too expensive? You're in the land of awesome cars, for crying out loud. Yeah, Chris, why don't you get a bloody car with all your YouTube money? You You bitch.
Well, I used to have a car. I used to have a really... on the surface, it looked like a crappy car. It's right. A Toyota Starlet. And if you go back and look through some of my older videos before 2016, I had it then for 2-3 years. I loved it, right? It was made in 1996. It was green, except it was kind of faded green. And bits of it were just falling apart. Like, the air conditioning didn't work, which in Japan in summer is brutal. Yeah. So I had to do the windows down every time it was a hot day. And even then, the windows didn't work sometimes, so that was also problematic. But it just kept on going. It was a furious little fighter. It was a lovely little car. Like, I don't know if you've seen Top Gear much, but they always talk about how Toyotas are invincible, right? Oh, we did talk about this before, I remember, a few weeks ago. But, yeah, it was a lovely little car. But I just don't need one living in Sendai City, because it's so well connected, Japan. If you live in an urban area, such as Sendai... you've got untold amounts of buses and trains and things, and it's just a nightmare driving through cities in Japan in a car. I really don't enjoy it. So as much as I want a car, like, this is the first time since moving to Sendai, it's the first time in 10 years that I haven't had a car. And I, like, driving in the countryside is my favourite thing. It's how I de-stress. So I just sort of sit in the car listening to the Smiths and various 80s music and be happy, but I haven't been able to do that for 2-3 years. Maybe that's why I'm more stressed since moving to Sendai, because living in Sendai is my first time to live in a city, and not only that, but I don't have my car to de-stress, so I suspect that's why my stress levels are higher in Sendai, actually.
Can I recommend
that, and the neighbours and the doors, the bloody OCD neighbours of Sendai.
Can I recommend you going down the arcade and having a couple of goes on Mario Kart or something like that, Gran Turismo? There's a new
listening to the Smiths on my earphones.
Just have a bit of that. I like about Japanese arcades is that you actually have those train simulators. They're very, very, very popular. And they're really quite hard to figure out. I mean, we might have spoken about these in the past, but you could get like custom, well, not custom, but like actually, you know, the Sega Genesis or the PlayStation had customized kind of train controllers you could buy back in the day. So you'll occasionally see them in charity shops or book offs or whatever you call them, hard offs, the second hand shops in Japan. You'll see these like specialized controllers for the PlayStation 2 and PlayStation or Dreamcast, where it's basically the controls for a train, so you can play train simulators at home and stuff. So I reckon that'd be quite therapeutic.
I've never understood the thrill of train simulator, given that you are basically going forwards or not going forwards, forwards or stop.
Exactly.
Where's the excitement in that?
It's about timing. Why? It's about using the inertia of your carriage. The trains are quite fascinating in that I'm not a big train fan, but I'm scared I might be slipping into being a train fan.
I was not expecting to hear that phrase this morning. Using the inertia of your carriage.
Yeah. If you're familiar with...
Sounds like one of your chat-up lines, Pete. Sort of thing you'd use in Hartlepool.
When I'm boggling, when I'm grinding up on it, so to speak, I'm using the inertia of my carriage. A friend told me, who is a train driver, he used to be the drive time DJ on Capital Radio, one of the biggest radio stations in the UK/the world, and he gave it all up just to become a train driver. And the piece of how much the rails actually touch the wheels is incredible. If you ever see the cross section of a wheel touching a train rail, I know we've gone off the rails literally with this. I find them fascinating. I find the inertia of trains quite fascinating. That's why they can't climb over hills, because if you started a train going really, really quickly at, say, Reading, you know where Reading is? You know how far away from London that is? And it was going full pelt. You just took your feet off the gas and just let it roll to a stop. It would crash through the barriers at Paddington. That's how much inertia a train has. That's why they're so hard to stop. So
how do you stop it?
Very carefully. You don't go very fast. That's why. So yes,
there you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go.
Train fact of the day.
Yeah, the portion that actually touches the rail of a train wheel is roughly the size of a CD. Train wheels are quite big. The actual contact between that and the rail is actually quite small. So you learn something new every day. And if only the contact between the door and the door frame of your neighbour was as small and featherlight, you might be all right.
I'm glad you managed to work that story back into the context of a train.
Trying to get back on track.
Speaking of trains, one of the reasons I found out the other day that the reason the Shinkansen can move so swiftly and elegantly without losing any traction around corners and things is the every single wheel on the bullet train is actually powered. So like a, you know, have a car, you have a car with a four-wheel drive, all wheels are in motion.
Yeah.
On the bullet train, all the carriages, all the wheels are actually powered. So it gives the train a lot better kind of traction and it's able to turn corners lots more swiftly.
And that's the one thing you do notice as well, the smoothness of the actual ride as well. I sort of noticed that when I came back to London and got on a, well, there was London Underground train, but there was also an Overground train as well. And I just sort of thought, wow, you forget how smooth the Shinkansen is. It is just like a float on a cloud. You can really get some good sleep.
It's, you know, it's really an experience that's hard to put into words for, I think, for a lot of us in the UK, probably in the US as well, where they don't have bullet trains.
No.
But it's just a beautiful thing, gliding through the countryside and cities effortlessly at 200 like miles an hour.
Mm.
It's a beautiful thing, honestly. I don't know why we don't have it in the UK yet. Why haven't we invented it yet, Pete?
privatisation, Chris.
Debate for another day. Tian from Perth, Australia says, "Hello, Chris and Pete. I wish I could set a nicer scene, but I'm sitting at my desk at work, but the day is made better by binge listening to the podcast for my up-and-coming trip to Japan in December or January.
Ooh.
My fiancé and I will be in Osaka for 4 days, and I was planning a day trip to Nara. But after hearing and seeing pictures of Himeji Castle, I'm now tempted to visit Himeji. Do you think it's possible to visit Himeji in a day, or is Nara a better place to visit? I wish I could visit both, but I'll be heading to Niseko after to ski. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. Tian." That's an easy one. That's an open and shut case. I'd say Nara is better than Himeji. Himeji Castle is pretty grand, pretty spectacular. But seeing as you're going to be in Osaka anyway, you can see Osaka Castle, which isn't quite as spectacular. It's bigger, but it's not as beautiful as Himeji Castle. But in Nara, you've got lots of things to see and do. Whereas in Himeji, I think you kind of go for the castle mainly. Other than that, it's a lovely city. But Nara's got a lot more historic and cultural value. Like there's the giant Daibutsu statue, large Buddha statue in a temple, which is an incredible thing to see. The Todaiji Temple, highly recommend it. You've got the Nodding Deer of Nara as well. Have you ever met them, Pete?
Chris, I am an expert on the Nodding Deers of Nara, who I think I spoke about them on the podcast before. One of them followed me into a kitchen and I was just alone with this deer in a kitchen, and I ate some of their biscuits. It was very nice. It was just a really relaxing
day.
It was just I think it was the kitchen where they make the biscuits. I don't know how I found my way in.
The kitchen where they make the deer.
But the deer.
I was expecting to say. Don't know why I was expecting that.
But yeah, it was all very strange. It was all very strange. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Nara's got deers and all kinds of buildings and stuff. But Himeji's just kind of about the castle as a UNESCO site, isn't it?
I mean, it is a beautiful castle. I have seen it. I saw it 2 or 3 weeks ago when I cycled through it. And actually, the Ryotaro and I cycled up to it and finished one day there and started the next day in front of it. And it's beautiful. It really is. Incredible place. Incredible castle. But yeah, I'd say don't if you're in Osaka already, Nara is like a half-hour train ride, whereas Himeji is a bullet train ride away.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd say stick with Nara. Have fun, and good luck in Niseko, beautiful place, skiing resort in Hokkaido, the finest in Japan, so I hear. So have a great trip, Tian.
Enjoy the dust. What do they call it? Dust? Snow? No,
dust.
What do they call it?
Powdery snow.
What do they call it? Powder, enjoy the
that
powder,
sounds really
man.
Sinister. Enjoy the dust.
Enjoy the dust.
Arnold Schwarzenegger would say.
Enjoy the dust, 6 feet under, baby. That wouldn't make a very good threatening action hero. Jeff
doesn't
has
work
got
in your accent.
Yeah, right. I'm going to hit you.
Your voice is too. Your accent is far too friendly to
exactly.
ever sound threatening.
Damn right. what I liked about that post you put on Twitter, you were trying to cajole people into slagging me off, basically saying, "How was Pete's debut on the Abroad in Japan podcast channel?" And I think everyone was really nice, Chris. I was a little bit, to be honest. There was nothing really spicy.
Just to give some context to listeners, last week before the podcast, I went on Twitter, and because it was Pete's first episode on the Abroad in Japan channel ever, his debut as it were, I wanted to get some feedback from you guys on Twitter and everyone and see what they thought of Pete. So I sort of said, you know, what do you think of Pete? How do you do? Let me know below. Everyone was nice, and I was really disappointed because I was expecting a wave, a torrent of abusive comments, and then I was going to just read them out for half an hour and have fun. But they were all good. It was really shocking. The only criticism you got were for your shorts, and I think that was it. Other than that, your shorts weren't very good.
Because when we recorded the actual podcast last week, I hadn't actually read any of them. So I'd like to thank all of Pitt for being very nice. I've noticed that a lot of people just... You know, you spend a lot of time editing and putting out videos and stuff. People can get rather vociferous about the rate of videos not coming out. And I kind of say, Chris has got 50 hard drives full of videos that will be coming out.
At least.
And you look at the quality of videos he releases every week or month or whatever. Whenever he releases a video, it's clearly... a lot more involving than just pointing a camera at himself. I don't understand it.
I think I set myself up because I sort of said, oh, the videos are going to come out daily, right?
Well,
so a lot of people look forward to it. So it was my fault partially. On the other hand, you know, people do say it a lot, but I'm kind of happy because it means they want to see more videos, right? They want to see more. But it just annoys me. Some people will be like, oh, finally, we've waited for months. It's like... a video came out 6 days ago, for God's sake. Like, give me a break. God damn it.
You can be nice about it, can't you? You've got like, oh, yes, brilliant, I've been waiting for this, or whatever, or you've been waiting for one. I just sort of, because this is the first time I've been on your channel properly, I sort of get a bit like, oh, no, this was really hard work for Chris. I get all defensive about my boy.
I think it's hard to appreciate what editing is like unless you kind of do it. Like, whenever I see someone editing a video or I see a decent video on YouTube, like, I kind of appreciate all the time and effort that's gone into it. Often it could take a week or two. So, yeah, it takes a lot of time and effort, but hopefully our videos are testament to that and they're good and people like them.
Yeah.
And your face.
Damn straight.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym... for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Fucking cover.
Wow. Next email. Jeff has got in touch. Hey, Chris and Pete. I'm excited about the rapidly impending Christmas season. You make that sound like one thing. The rapidly impending Christmas season. Hey, I've got you a rapidly impending Christmas season card. With that in mind, what do you both want for Christmas this year? Sounds like you're buying, Jeff. And what past Christmas gift do you remember most fondly? Have a great week, Jeff.
I would like... Jeff, I would like a rubber door, which I will then bequeath to my neighbour, and so my stress levels will drop in the morning. That's what I want Father Christmas to bring me, a rubber door. Somebody invent a rubber door. My best Christmas present is a tough one. The first Christmas present I remember getting was Thunderbirds Tracy Island. For those of you who don't know what Thunderbirds is, it's that puppet show from the 60s. That kind of had a comeback in the 90s when I was a kid.
You're such an old soul, yeah, Chris.
You what?
You're such an old soul.
I know. When I watched it in the 90s growing up, Thunderbirds, right, I loved it. Puppet show, rockets, missiles. It was, like, yeah. It was so cool. I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is so groundbreaking for the time. And yet it had actually been made 40 years earlier, in like the 60s. But yeah, I remember getting Tracy Island, and I wanted it so much. It was so cool. Tracy Island is the island base where Thunderbirds launched their missions from, and it had a little retractable tunnel where the plane would come out and take off. Oh, it was magical. I loved that. And also Nintendo 64. I remember getting that. That was a glorious day.
That's a big one.
Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
Playing GoldenEye, playing Perfect Dark. Oh, such good memories. It feels like a dream. It's so far away now. What about you, Pete?
Genuinely, about... I don't think it was last year. It might have been the year before. I got a... This is going to sound like a like an advert, but like a like a tiny little... Probably the size of an iPhone. A little Bose portable speaker. And genuinely, I use it every day, Chris. Now I'm a man who buys wires and speakers and microphones and bits of technology constantly. My Amazon... When I have to submit my taxes to my accountant... My credit card bill is disgusting. My accountant says, Peter, you can't possibly need all of this stuff. And I say, the answer is I don't, but I just seem to acquire things. You know, my flat was a pretty decent size before I moved in. Now I'm in, it's just getting smaller by the second, and I'm just getting covered in wires. I'm like a big spaghetti boy, and it's kind of upsetting. But this speaker I use every day. Somebody bought it for me, and I cannot love it more. It's just... wonderful. So yeah, literally,
where
just
do you
a Bluetooth
use it in
speaker.
Your apartment?
So I use it in the morning to listen to podcasts. I'll use it in to listen to radio. I listen and I plug it into my projector at night to watch, I don't know, a Brooklyn Nine-Nine or an Office or, you know, a Family Guy or something before I go to bed. And it just, you know, it's nice and bassy, and it it does the job. And yeah, just, man, it's just great.
This podcast is sponsored by Bose.
Sponsored by Bose. I think they did sponsor our podcast very briefly. But I think our range, the Stakhanov Corporation, they're all of their podcasts. There might have been an advert put into the ether at some point, the special thought. But I just really enjoy the versatility of a Bluetooth speaker.
I've got at least two Bluetooth speakers because they are quite good. What do you want for Christmas this year, though? Now you've got your wires, your cables, your Bluetooth Bose speaker. What do you want this year? What could you possibly want?
Well, it doesn't have to be Bose. I'm just sort of mentioning it as an example. But what I want for this Christmas is I've got another speaker that's like a waterproof one. It's not made by any big brand. It's like a fiver from like John Lewis. And it's in the shower. But when you connect to it, it's called Shower Party. Now,
oh my God.
It just sounds a bit dirty, Chris. I'm having a shower party. Shower party. I'm connecting to my shower party. It doesn't seem right. So basically, I want a wireless Bluetooth speaker that's waterproof. I'm giving some legit advice on what to buy me for Christmas, guys. That's all I'm saying. No, nobody out there. I mean, my family.
Yes. If you want to give something to Pete for Christmas, ladies and gentlemen,
get me a
give him a shower party. Nothing more.
Exactly.
Nothing less.
That man's having a front door party. He's having a lovely time.
So every day. When you're in the shower, studying your Japanese vocabulary, as we all know, that's where you
that's
study
where
your Japanese
I learn it.
Vocabulary. You do it whilst having a shower party, simultaneously yeah. while studying.
I'm off to Romania at the weekend, Friday. And
another holiday.
It's not really a holiday, because basically I work weekends, but I work like a Sunday afternoon. I've done something even more stupid in January. So I've got to Cluj in Romania. Just going to have a wander around there for a bit. Turns out there's very little things to do, which it suits me because I'm a very limited person. I get up rather late. But in January, there was a sale on flights from Heathrow to Istanbul.
Right.
So I'm flying out, right? Get this. 11 o'clock on Friday morning. I don't work Fridays or Saturdays. Flying out on Friday morning, getting there about tea time, and then flying back out Sunday morning before my radio show, getting home about 11 o'clock. So I'm spending one full day in Istanbul, 4 hours of flight to get to Istanbul and back.
So bizarre.
Stupid. Stupid.
Just be sure to take your Bluetooth speaker with you. Yeah. You never know when it's going to come in handy.
I think so. Yeah. So this was not sponsored by any Bluetooth company. I was just surprised that something someone bought me, I use every day. And I go, you know what? This was a good present. So well done, everyone.
The best kind of presents. Use them every day. Hi, Chris and Pete. My name is Baihaki, and I'm a diploma-level architecture student living in Brunei.
Whoa.
Darussalam. I love the word Darussalam. It's my favourite word. Darussalam. Your podcast has always... I sounded really weird. Your podcast has always been my companion with a lot of caffeine for staying up late doing assignments, and they've always been wonderful to listen to. My question is, what are your favourite buildings in Japan, and Ooh. Why? And which places in Japan would you recommend to find, which is interesting and wonderful architecture, old or new? That's a really interesting question. I love my architecture. I love buildings. I think my favourite skyscraper is in Yokohama. It's the Landmark Tower. If anyone that's been to Yokohama, you will have probably seen it. It's a giant... It looks like a castle out of a chess... It looks like a chess piece. It looks like a castle.
Right.
Giant size and scale. It's an incredible tower. It's about 300 metres in height, and it's a Goliath.
Hmm.
It's the second or third tallest skyscraper in Japan, and it looks incredible. The Skytree, I've warmed up to it. I'm starting to like it more and more.
It's very good of you.
I'm getting there. It's taken 6 years. But the Skytree, Tokyo Skytree, 634 metres of Skytree.
Right.
It's a big old building. But I remember I was in Tokyo recently and I was turning the corner and down a back alley somewhere in Asakusa.
Yeah.
And I just looked up and there it was on the horizon. And I think the sun was going down. The pink sky over this massive skyscraper looming, and I had all the sort of cables hanging overhead. Because obviously the cables in Japan are everywhere. And it just looked really cool. The Skytree has definitely grown on me. Hmm. But the Landmark Tower in Yokohama is probably my favourite skyscraper in Japan. My favourite castle is... it's either Himeji Castle or Matsuyama Castle.
Right.
Because Matsuyama Castle's on a mountain in the middle of the city. And it's an amazing 360 view. So that's quite a cool structure. I don't know. I'll have to think a little bit more. What about you, Pete? Anything spring to mind?
I mean, everything kind of... you've probably heard me tapping away. It's really hard to type quietly on a mechanical keyboard. Another piece of electronic machinery I didn't need, but I bought. the NTT Dokomo Yoyogi building, which is basically a skyscraper in Shinjuku, Shinjuku, that just looks like the Empire State Building. They've just ripped it fucking tooth and nail. It's the fourth tallest building in Tokyo, and it's basically just a copy of the Empire State Building. The arrogance, especially because down the way you've got the Tokyo Tower, which is a rip-off of the old the one in Paris, the Eiffel Tower. So you know,
the one in Paris.
Yeah, the one in Paris. I was buying my time.
What is it? The world's most famous skyscraper. What's it called? The one in Paris. Yeah. Yeah, no, the Dokomo Tower's beautiful. It does look like it. I've never seen the real the real Empire State Building.
Well, imagine the Dokomo Tower, and it's just like that. But what I like about that building is that it's not actually the head office of the company. They're located in the Sanno Park Tower. The building houses a couple of offices, but it's mainly just for technical equipment. It's mainly just for, like, wires and shit. It's just basically storage.
Your sort of place, then.
Definitely, definitely.
Wires everywhere. Yeah, it does look cool. It really helps to give a sense of definition to the Shinjuku skyscraper district, which is just a hodgepodge of skyscrapers in downtown Tokyo. One of my favourite districts, because there's just some beautiful buildings there.
There's a big chimney. It's on one of the stops in the Yamamoto line. It might be Ikebukuro. Ikebukuro.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking.
It's
of.
Just
north
a big
Ikebukuro,
chimney.
A
huge chimney. It just burned or used to burn rubbish in Ikebukuro, and that's an interesting just construction because you just rarely see in the middle of quite small buildings just this gigantic chimney, and it reminds me of the old Hartlepool. General Hospital that used to burn like old bandages and nappies and stuff day and night.
Brilliant. A beautiful picture painted there of your hometown, Pete.
Yeah, it's a shill.
A hospital but... with a giant flaming chimney.
There was a piece in the BBC about Hartlepool. I have to send it over, but the highlight about vigilantes going out and protecting them and their friends is property, all men sort of going out and protecting their stuff from miscreants. The highlight was a CCTV clip of a man pooing in his own hand, and that was on the BBC website. Thanks, Hartlepool, you're the best.
God. And you regret leaving Hartlepool to move to London?
I'm only coming back to switch on their Christmas lights. I'm joking, it's a great place with great people. They have just been let down for too long by some pretty poor management. And, it's the eighth highest council tax in the whole of the UK, Hartlepool.
I think for listeners outside the UK, they're just going to be...
confused.
In such awe and horror of your hometown. I mean, yeah, I won't judge it till I go there. And I'm going to go there. Never. No. The next comment is from Alabama. Hi, Chris and Pete. I love listening to your podcast on my morning commute to work. It makes my drive much more pleasant. Chris, you've mentioned before that female fans rarely approach you when they see you out in the real world because they find you intimidating. That's true, actually. I'll get on that in a minute. As an extremely introverted or grumpy woman living and working in a small town in Alabama, where Southern hospitality is a pretty big deal, I'm almost required to be constantly chirpier and friendlier. I'm often told that I look intimidating or unapproachable because I rarely smile or initiate conversations with strangers. In Japan, do people tend to interact a lot with strangers, like acknowledging them with a smile or hello while walking down the street, or strike up a conversation in passing? Keep up the great work. Jennifer from Alabama. I find that word really hard to say in a British accent, because Alabama... just in British pronunciation, we'd say Alabama, but it doesn't sound right, does it?
Would Alabama. We? Yeah, you've got to go with Alabama. It's not right.
Alabama. interesting question, interesting comment. I do get literally no girls coming and talking to me in person. Mm. What I did get when I was cycling, I got spotted quite a lot in major cities like Kyoto or Osaka or Fukuoka. Lots of people did come and say hello, and 90% of the time, it is a guy. It is a guy. As you would have seen, right, when we were in Kyoto, I remember you were there. The monkey
Kyoto,
park,
Osaka, there were so many people, it was crazy.
At least 10 times, 20 times, that monkey park alone. And it was all guys.
Some of them were
but
monkeys.
What I did find, even the monkey said hello, I was in awe. But I was at this a few days later, I think in Fukuoka, I went to this Buddhist statue, which I was doing a video about. And a few hours after I left it, I looked on my phone. I think I was looking through Instagram or something, Instagram messages. And some girl had taken a photo of me recording in front of the Buddha statue. It was really kind of scary. It was just like, is this you, Chris? Was this you? And I was like, yeah, it was me. Why don't you come say hello instead of taking scary voyeuristic photos of me out and about? It's really, this happened to me a few times. People just take a photo of me in public and then send it to me like, is this you? Was this you? And it's kind of creepy. But yeah, I was like, why don't you just come and say hello? And she said, oh, you know, you look busy and scary and intimidating. And I'm not that intimidating. In person, I'm actually, I think I'm kind of friendly.
Yeah, you are. I think it was because your humour
in my voice there when I said that.
But. Your humour is a little acerbic and a little bit sarcastic at times and satirical. So I think people might find that intimidating. And you got to remember the idiot factor. Most men are idiots, so they'll get themselves into all kinds of trouble at the drop of a hat. So I wouldn't worry about that. But I've been to Alabama. Southern hospitality is a big deal, right through the South, and I love that part of the world because it's just wonderful. So, Jennifer from Alabama, I'm sure you might think that you're introverted, you might think that you are a little grumpy. Your words, not ours. I imagine you're just about fine.
I'm sure she's lovely. And to answer the question, though, Jennifer, people don't say as high as much as we would get back home, I'd say. Small talk is far less common in Japan. And the problem is, when you do have small talk, it's often the same three or four questions. So, why are you here? Why are you in Japan?
Yeah.
How long are you here for? So, yeah, small talk is rarer in Japan. As we said last week, I think the best place to meet people in Japan and get people talking to you is Osaka, where people will talk to you randomly, and if you draw a fake gun and pretend to shoot them randomly on the street, they'll react to it, bizarrely.
Yeah, we learned that last week.
It does happen. But, no, it is quite rare. It is quite rare, unfortunately. So, I don't know. I guess you'll have to see when you come here, find out what happens. It's a bit anticlimactic, wasn't it? You were expecting something brilliant there, something profound, but no. Yeah, people don't talk to you much. That's the bottom line, sadly.
And that's the truth.
I miss it. I miss the small talk. I remember actually going back home to the UK for the first time after I'd lived in Japan 2.5 years without returning home to the UK. Mm. And I went to a shop, and it was just a sweet shop, and the staff, I struck up a conversation with the staff. And you don't really do that in Japan much. The staff here are very formal.
Yeah.
They're very good, very well disciplined, but it's very formal, and you can't really get to see the humanity of the person you're talking to at a shop. Whereas in the UK, you know, you just talk to them like a normal person, and I miss that. I remember when I was in the UK that first time going back, I just started harassing all the staff in every shop I went into. I tried to start a big old conversation because I could, and I just saw this staff getting really angry at me after like 5 minutes, like, why are you still talking to me? Get out. But I just wanted to talk to people. I wanted to be loved. But that doesn't happen in Japan. So
no. And I think that's why sometimes it can be a little bit isolating as well, especially if you don't speak the language. Next question. Shall we go down to Noah's? Does that work for you?
Yes.
The Tesla guy?
Yeah.
Hey, Chris and Pete. I listen to the podcast while I'm working in one of the body shops for Tesla, which is quite huge. I'm going to Japan for the first time in April for a 3-week vacation with my girlfriend and possibly parents as well. That's a good period of time. 3 weeks, I think, is just about perfect because you get over the first, perfect. Oh my God, and then, you know, you get a bit of time to just acclimatise a bit. My question is, what are your thoughts of the new Golden Route, where you take 7 days to go down the course of Japan from Tokyo to Kyoto instead of directly to it? And also, do we need to worry about bears? also, how many days should you spend in Osaka and Kyoto to get a good grasp of the city?
All right, questions.
Yeah, Dr. Questionstein.
Greedy rascal, Noah. It's quite interesting, though. So he sent a picture through of this new route that I've never heard about, the Hokuriku Pass. So right. Obviously, if you come to Japan, you get JR rail passes for different parts of the country, which makes travelling on bullet trains and public transport phenomenally cheaper. And this route is quite interesting. I've never seen this before. You start in Tokyo. You then appear to go to somewhere in Niigata. I think you go to Toyama City, and then Kanazawa, and then Fukui, and then Kyoto. And if you want, on the map, there is a little day trip into Takayama in Gifu, which is the city where we filmed the pachinko video, actually, back in July.
Ah.
It's a really beautiful place. They've got these kind of old houses from the 1800s Edo era, untouched, and it's kind of beautiful. It looks like a good route, actually. I really like it.
Yeah.
I would recommend it, definitely, because most people do just go from Tokyo to Kyoto direct. If you've got 3 weeks, I would highly recommend this route, because Kanazawa is beautiful from what I saw of it when I passed through it on the cycle, however briefly it was. Toyama was good, but I wouldn't necessarily go there on my holiday. I would, if you were doing this route, I would go to Kanazawa, and I would go to Takayama in Gifu, because it's an amazing little city. So, yeah. But that won't take you an extra week. So, yeah. Divert some of those extra days to Osaka and Kyoto. If you want a good time in Osaka and Kyoto, I would spend at least 3 days in each, the minimum. You know, that's the most amount. The least amount, sorry, that you'd need to really see and enjoy and do things. So 3 days each in Osaka and Kyoto. And, yeah, and then maybe 2 days in Kanazawa and a day in Takayama.
Yeah.
Really cool route, though. For those of you wondering, again, that route was, it's the Hokuriku route. The new golden route. I think if you just type that into Google, it should come up. New golden route.
Well, the Kanazawa was one of the places that I visited for the first time this time, with the ninja houses, and like I got a little bike and I rode them down the river, and it really was lovely.
1 to 10?
It's up there. It's up there from my experiences. I'd give it a strong 7.5.
7.5. See, I was really looking forward to it because we cycled through it. And Kanazawa, for those of you that don't know, it's kind of, it used to be one of the richest places in Japan. It's a bit, it's about an hour away from Kyoto, and it's around the Sea of Japan side, around the back end of Japan. And it's a very decadent, very beautiful looking city. It's got the most grand looking station I've ever seen. Did you see that, Pete? The station?
Yes.
It looks like a dictator's palace. It looks like a palatial estate. But I'd love to go there properly and have another look around. But when we went there, it was raining. And so the only thing we did was go around the market, which was an incredible market. We made a video about it, so check that out. But, yeah, I'm going to go back there and have a look because I feel kind of envious that you got to see more of it than I did. Now you've been back there yourself, Pete.
Yeah.
Cycled up and down it. Got a question here from Comacode. Comacode. Hi, guys. Love the podcast. I have a stupid question. When I was in Tokyo, don't be so harsh on yourself, Comacode. I'm sure it's not stupid.
Sure, it's
when
fine.
I was in Tokyo a couple of years ago, I wanted to try a beef bowl from Yoshinoya in Ginza. The problem is, I didn't know how to open the door since there were no handles. It looked like it was a sliding door, but I didn't see any signs to confirm my theory. I was too afraid to try, since I might look like an idiot failing at opening the door in front of a Japanese salaryman who were already inside the shop. I waited for several minutes for someone to enter the shop so I could copy their behaviour and how to open the door. But no one came to my rescue. I gave up and walked to McDonald's instead to try a teriyaki burger. How the hell do I open these doors? Thanks, Comacode. Okay, I'll take back my first comment. That was a, I'm not going to say stupid question. I must have said, I must admit, though, that is the sort of situation I found myself in many times in Japan.
Yeah.
Not knowing how to do something and then just watching and trying to copy the behaviours of other people. I will reveal now, the doors to Yoshinoya are sliding automatic doors. So you sort of walk up to it and it should just open. Or you can tap the door. Like, it's quite common in Japan, the door handle, you actually tap it. Rather than push it, it's kind of got this touch sensor, and you tap the door and it slides open. So if you never see a handle, or it's not clear how the door opens, just walk up to it.
Give it a little tap.
Tap the door near the handle, where the handle should be, and the door will open. Yeah, I'm fairly sure that happened to me, though, so I'll let you off there.
Yeah, massively. There's one place in the corner of Chinatown that does little kind of bento boxes and stuff, and all of, it's a Japanese-run company and stuff, and they've got those doors, and it's the only place I've ever seen them outside of Japan. And it is, Yoshinoya is one of those places where, yeah, that really does remind me of those doors, because they are automatic, but you've got to kind of request the door to automatically open, if that's fair. Just give it a little tap, give it a little punch. If in doubt, punch it, all right?
If in doubt, punch the door.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the way this whole podcast has just descended into a conversation about doors and numerous shapes and forms.
Well, we
doors that open, doors that don't, doors that get banged, and doors that don't.
Exactly. I think we started the podcast talking about a door. We're ending the podcast talking about a door. There's a beautiful journey there, and we're just right back where we started. I'm chill about
it. The title of this week's podcast will have to have something door-related in it, no doubt.
The doors.
Watch the ratings plummet. For now, though, guys, that is all the questions we have time for. Do keep them coming. Do send them in to us at abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We will be back next week to do it all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be listening from out there in the big wide world, from Sweden to Brazil, have yourself a great week and we'll see you next time. Have a good one.
Bye. Mind the door.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.